Welcome to ClickFunnels Radio, where we go behind the scenes and uncover the tactics and strategies top entrepreneurs are using to make more sales, dominate their markets, and how you can get those same results. Here's your host, Dave Woodward.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to ClickFunnels Radio. This is going to be a fun podcast. A person who's new to me, but I think just in the few minutes we had the opportunity of getting to know each other, you are going to absolutely love Raj. Let me give you a little background here. He's known as the heavyweight champion of story, Rajiv, or better known as Raj Nation. So Rajiv Nathan is the founder of Startup Hypeman. He's helping growing companies not suck at telling their story so they stand out to their audience. Obviously, for us, storytelling is one of the main things that Russell has spent a ton of time on. Telling your story is one of the main things we're going to get into. In addition to that, his whole idea is really trying to help you find a way of standing apart from your competitors, breaking through in your own personal category. He's named as the agent of change by Huffington Post. He's given a TED Talk. He's been featured in Inc., Forbes, and a ton more other places. He's also a hip-hop artist, a yoga instructor, and host of a popular show called Startup Hypeman is his podcast. So, Raj, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I'm going to have to talk to you more about the whole yoga stuff later. Something my wife is always big into and something I need to do more of. I'm completely unflexible, so I need to figure that piece out. But with it, I'm super excited to kind of dig deep into this whole idea of, you know, we were talking earlier about this idea of an elevator pitch. These days with COVID, rarely you can find yourself actually in an elevator with a person unless you're standing on one of the two stars and two corners and not having the opportunity of really spending that much time pitching your company. But I think some of the cool, exciting things, I'm admiring your background here. We were talking a little bit about some of the things in the background, obviously Hamilton being one of the big influences there, The Rock, Kobe, some of my dear friends and influences as well. But with it, I really want to kind of dig deep into some of the stuff you're doing here. So anything else about yourself personally before we dive right into this whole K-Pasa moment?
Good question. Anything about myself personally, aside from what you've covered and what you see back here, I think an interesting story might be to know that aside from just enjoying Hamilton, I've actually had the privilege of having a couple Hamilton cast members as guests on my podcast.
Oh,
and we recorded
cool.
It backstage, the Chicago cast, I should clarify, I'm in Chicago. And we recorded it backstage, two different episodes with two different cast members. And then afterwards, they like brought me on stage and I ended up getting tickets to the show. Still had to pay because, you know, there's no free ticket for Hamilton. But got like got a bigger discount and got like fifth row seats. So I have the privilege, and I understand this is a crazy privilege to say this because some people have never seen it at all. I've seen the show three times.
Wow, that's awesome. My wife's seen it twice without me. I am dying to go see it again. So it's usually been girls' trips where she's gone and had the opportunity of seeing it, but I'm dying to see it. Obviously,
my wife also gives me that feedback that she's like, yeah, I was talking about how you've seen it three times, but I noticed none of those times was with me.
I can totally sympathize with your wife then.
But it was cool. I'll tell you, just from that quick story, like it was cool to be able to talk to people in the art world, right, and the performance world, and learn from them how they go about their craft. And I'll tell you, like, I thought to reach out to one of the people first, and it was, you know, she's like backup dancer, like number six or whatever, like woman five, I think is like her official like character name. And the way when I saw her moving on stage, I was like, this actually helps influence the story so much. It's not like the thing, it's like front and center. But the way these people are moving on stage is helping create an effect. And without them, if it's just the lead actors, you don't really have much here. You don't have as much here. And so I was just so intrigued by that. And to be honest, I also thought, well, if I'm going to try to interview someone on the show, I'm going to guess the person playing Hamilton probably gets a lot of interview requests. But you know who doesn't get a lot of interview requests? Probably Woman 5. and then I reached out to them, I think through Twitter originally or through Instagram, and then had an awesome interview with her. And then it turned out that another cast member happened to be at the same gym like that I was at, rock climbing. And I just happened to talk to her and she was like, oh, that sounds awesome. So just a really cool like way to not only like have this like big fandom over something, but then also like become a creator within it to an extent.
I love it. Hamilton's been one of the I love theater, probably because I have absolutely no ability to sing or dance or anything like that. And so I have such a great appreciation for it. But Hamilton's been one of the things that's been fun for me to watch with my family so many different times. And I think the part I'm most fascinated by is the story of Hamilton itself, the way in which it's weaved through so many different pieces of the story and the backstory behind it. And then even hearing people interviewed who are played in the cast outside of it, is just, it's a crazy, crazy story. So if you have not seen Hamilton, first and foremost, go see it and then really study the storyline behind it. And again, Raj, if you want to dig into that part of it right now, I'm more than happy to, otherwise we can go to K-Pasa, but, Hamilton is something that has a ton of amazing storytelling.
Well, you know, real quick, what I can share on that. So when I first like came into contact with Hamilton, first, it was a year of just listening to the soundtrack on Spotify before I finally saw it. And then first time I saw it, I'm like beside myself in that theater, just this like glass case of emotion. Cause I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm finally here and in front of this. But what I realized after having listened to it for so long, but then actually seeing it, is I realized just how good, to your point, how good of the story arc there is. And in all my work within storytelling and business storytelling over the last several years, I was like, this is it. This is the story arc. Because I totally saw how you could take that and apply it to creating a presentation. Because if you look at most presentations, they are like, I mean, they're awful. People don't like getting a presentation, quote unquote, like done to them because it's just not good. And it'll be like, slide one, here's a photo of our headquarters and we have six locations around the world. Slide two, here's our executive leadership. Here's their headshots. They have combined experience of 300 years somehow. And then slide three, let me tell you about our product, et cetera. Right. And so I saw Hamilton and I said, well, there's something here for how we can apply this into storytelling and business and presentation development. And whether you're using a presentation itself or you're more so speaking in a story arc that, you know, you can almost visualize slides, but you don't use slides for the Hamilton model. Like this, I created this whole like Hamilton presentation method that works really well. And the short of it is that if you look at how Hamilton is constructed as a play, the first thing they do is give away the ending, right? Like it opens with Aaron Burr saying, I'm the damn fool that shot him. And when the curtains open, actually, the first line, is, as you know, is how does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, right? And they go through that line and it's essentially saying, hey, how does someone who had nothing and came from nothing grow up to accomplish a lot of things and build this fantastic legacy? So that's the opening line. And then it's like a thesis question, essentially. And then they give away the ending with Burr saying, I shot him. But people don't leave the theater, right? They're not like, oh, that's it. I'm out. Because now they're like really hooked because they're like, all right, I got to see how this comes together. And then they build tension over time. But the three sort of like hallmark things that I identified were, you know, it ends with the pistol duel with Burr shooting Hamilton. But they can't do that without the right build to get there and the right tension to get there. Because if you just have one duel where character shoots another character, in this case, Vice President Aaron Burr, people are going to leave that theater being like, what the hell? How can like the Vice President just shoot someone? So you'd get a, like a mixed reaction coming out or a negative reaction. Cause they'd be like, this doesn't make sense. So what they do instead that's really smart is they set the table the right way near the beginning where they have a first duel, not those two, but just two characters that are relatively inconsequential. But the point of that song, the 10 Duel Commandments, as you know, is to set the terms for what 1700s America was like and what dueling culture was like and what the rules around it were. So you come out of that song with agreement that, okay, the world I've chosen to enter here operates this way. Then later on, they have a second duel where a character you're a little bit more emotionally invested in gets shot and killed. And you realize, okay, this might be the terms of the world, but there's like real impact here, which perfectly sets up the third duel. And rather than being like, you monster, right? It more so feels like this inevitable ending that's about to take place. And then it happens and your belief system, your beliefs are reinforced by what you've just seen. Because they gave away that ending up front and then they built properly to get there. And people leave the arena reflecting on the life of Hamilton, reflecting on his legacy. And oh yeah, what did they ask at the very front? Hey, how does this person create a legacy? And that's what we leave the theater buzzing about. And so when I looked at that, I said, okay, here's how we can model a presentation off of. First thing we're going to do is give away the ending, quote unquote. And what that means is tell your audience the destination you're trying to get them to. And then from there, you're going to architect the world. So you basically align on the terms of today. So the world as they understand it, like relative to the industry, relative to the product, et cetera. You do that. Once you've come to terms with, hey, well, this is the world, this is the way the world operates today, you then start to indicate a shift. And this is where you get to that second duel where you're like, things are changing. There's market forces at play changing the world that you know. And there's impact to doing something about it. There's also impact to doing nothing about it. And here's what that looks like in either scenario. And then that sets up the third duel, the inevitable ending, which is your product or your offer, whatever it is about you and your company you want to deliver, that's the inevitable ending. And then you go into explaining more about it and results, et cetera. And what do you finish with? You finish with the beginning. You finish with what was that ending you gave away? What was that destination you talked about? So you bookend it with the same thing. And when you follow this format, what's very counterintuitive is that usually a minimum of 50% or more of the presentation, you're not even talking about yourself. Like the first 50% plus, you're not even talking about your company yet. You're just building up the world and talking about the shift and the impact. Because when you do that, then it makes ingesting whatever it is about you so much more easier. You're so much more likable because it's like it comes from a place of the right context. And you're not left beating someone over the head for 25 slides with, well, here's why we're great. Trust me, we're great. No, for real, we're great. I told you we're great. Here's one more reason why we're great. And so that's what I was able to map out. And with multiple different, you know, startups that I've worked with, we've implemented that methodology and had a lot of success. The interesting thing, though, is it's not just like, oh, I saw this in a play and everyone should do it because I saw it in a play. I actually corroborated this against other forms of storytelling. And what was really interesting was that almost to a T, it is how it's how Steve Jobs delivered the original iPhone keynote. And almost to a T, it's how Martin Luther King Jr. delivered the famous I Have a Dream speech. And the funny thing about that speech is we all know it as the I Have a Dream speech, right? Like that's the hallmark speech of his. Ask any American, sure. You know, what's it called? It's the I Have a Dream speech. Interestingly, even though we have a day off to honor him, most people have never actually watched the speech. But I have watched this and I've studied it several times over. And, you know, he got a million people to show up that day and it had obviously a rippling impact. And it's a 16-minute speech. And we know it is the I Have a Dream speech, but it's not until 11 and a half minutes in that he ever first utters the words, I have a dream. Mm. He constructs his story there from start to finish in very much the same way that Hamilton is constructed.
That's crazy. So can you break that down for me?
Yeah, and I don't know that line for line as well as I know Hamilton, but essentially the way MLK opens the speech is saying like, well, here's why we're here today. We're trying to achieve this thing. Then from there, he quotes Abraham Lincoln. He's like 87 years ago, Abraham Lincoln stood on these steps and said these things. So he sets the table for what's the world today and what's happened since that time. And so people start to agree with that. And they say, yeah, that's the way things are. That's how things have been going. Then from there, he says, but we have seen that freedoms, I'm butchering the words here, but he's like, we have seen freedom does not exist for everyone. And in fact, there are many people who are stripped of the basic things that were promised. What does he say? They wrote a blank check, something like that. Like America wrote a blank check. And now it's time to cash in on this debt. So now he starts to introduce like the struggle and the change that's necessary. And then from there, he even talks about like the impact of what it would mean if they enact this change, if we as a people enact change. But he also covers trade-offs. And this is something I always do in presentations as well, is you talk about what's good, or what could happen if you do the right thing. But before you do that, you actually talk about what would happen if you don't do the right thing. And what MLK talks about is essentially like what happens if you don't do anything. He talks about, we need help from the white man to do this. So it's like, here's some trade-offs that need to happen to get there. And in a presentation, like a sales presentation or a pitch deck presentation, the trade-offs I always like to look at as, don't go in acting like if they did not use your solution or partner with you, that they would go out of business. Because that's like a ridiculous assumption to make. So instead, acknowledge what would still work for them if they didn't do anything, but then show them what they're missing out on. And then say, that's why making a change makes so much sense, because you're going to have this impact. So it basically like lets their guard down because you level with them. And MLK very similarly did something to that effect as well. And then that ultimately segues into, I have a dream. Here's what my dream means. Here's what we accomplished with the dream. And what I said at the beginning is essentially what I'm saying at the end here. Free, and it ends with free at last, free at last, free at last. Free at last. Yeah.
That's awesome. Can you break down the Steve Jobs one like that?
Yeah. Oh, man. So the Steve Jobs one, he opens by saying, if I recall this, he opens by saying, we are here today to introduce a revolutionary internet browser, phone, and there was a third thing on it as well. I'm trying to remember what the third thing was, but whatever like base thing the iPhone was originally. An iPod. It was. We're here to introduce a revolutionary new internet browser, a revolutionary new phone, and a revolutionary new iPod. He talks about how everything we've known about phones to this point. And I think he says, oh, and by the way, it's all going to be on one device. And people are like, what? and then he says, well, here's the challenge with the cell phone as we know it. And he talks about like the evolution of the phone and how all these buttons are on it, even when you don't want to use the buttons. So he sets the table of, well, here's what we know the world to be. Here's the problem with the way things are. There's all these buttons on it when you don't need it. And then from there, he then transitions into, but what if we remove the buttons and imagine what that would be like and imagine what you could do. And then he unveils, here's Apple's first ever phone, the iPhone. And then he goes into like a full demo from there.
Right. That's awesome. So how do you use that in working with your clients? What are some of the things that, what's the practical application that in my, either I'm doing this as a product or service pitch deck, or I'm talking in an elevator pitch, kind of transition to this whole K-PASA situation. What's the construct I can actually, our listeners can take away and say, okay, I got an idea about this. How do I actually put it in my business?
Yeah. So if we try to transition to that K-PASA model, I think the starting point before you create the deck is to understand what's that foundational elevator pitch. And like you said, at the beginning, we're not really in elevators right now, but that's okay because you have to rethink what an elevator pitch really means. An elevator pitch is your core value proposition delivered in, I'd say, 30 to 60 seconds. If you ask everyone at your company, hey, what does our company do? And you get, 15 different responses, chances are you have a messaging problem and you need to align on a singular elevator pitch. So it is not just like when you get into an elevator, which no one's really doing. Right. You got to think about it as our core value prop. It is because when you get that right, it becomes the foundation for that presentation deck. It becomes the foundation for your cold email strategy. It becomes the foundation for your website copy. It becomes the foundation for the ads you want to run, right? That's how powerful this K-PASA formula is. And what I see most companies do is they will talk about their company and they'll say something to the effect of, we have a data-driven platform that does these things, or we have an AI-powered neuro-linguistic programming sensor that does these things. And so it's very like product-oriented or very solution-oriented. The idea behind K-PASA is a formula I came up with a few years ago. Do you know any Spanish, Dave, that you would know what K-PASA means?
Muy poquito.
Okay, so you probably know then that K-PASA means what's up,
what's
right? Or what's happening, right? And I think, and so I like that this was the acronym I came to with this because it's just really easy to remember. And it's a super simple formula, but it's really, really powerful. So KPASA here is an acronym, P-A-S-A, problem, approach, solution, action. Problem, approach, solution, action. Problem, approach, solution, action. Now, what you're doing here when you communicate in this way is you fundamentally provide context and frame of reference for why you should exist. But most importantly, you lead with empathy. You say, I understand the way things are today. I get it. That stinks. And we understand that's what it's like. Here's what we're doing about it. Here's what we have done about it. Here's our approach to that. Here's our offering. And here's the results you get out of that. And then the action is your call to action or your ask. You could also think of it as that. And I think, you know, that's probably something that ClickFunnels can get behind because so much of a good funnel is being able to relate to where the lead is at today and then draw them to a solution, not hit them over the head up front with, hey, come check out our amazing platform. It's almost like that like infomercial style like idea where it's like, do you struggle with these things? Right. And then you draw them to a solution. And again, the context, frame of reference, and empathy. The person says, the audience says, oh yeah, they understand me. And you hook them, you give them a reason to listen because you relate to them up front. You make it about them. Just like in the presentation I talked about before, where more than 50% of it is about the audience before you talk about yourself. Similarly with KPASA, 50% plus is about them and the problem they're experiencing before you talk about your solution. And the good thing is, the better you articulate your problem, the less you have to say about your solution because it starts to write itself.
I've seen that happen so often. Even when we started ClickFunnels, that was really the main thing. I mean, we built it for ourselves. And so we were dealing with that problem. I mean, our biggest problem was we actually had a whole bunch of products in the warehouse we couldn't sell because we were having to worry about graphic designers and copywriters and all the different people that were necessary to actually create a website at that time. And what we wanted was something where Russell could literally go in and just drag and drop, make the changes on the fly instead of having to wait. Because every time we went back to the developers or back to the designers or back to the copywriters, it's like, oh my gosh, yeah. It's another week. It's another delay. It's another delay. And we could never sell anything. And so our biggest problem was speed. And how do we actually overcome the tech issues that we were struggling with so much at that time? And now, you know, fast forward since then, we've got hundreds of thousands of customers who are actually using our platform, solving that exact same problem. So I totally get that KPASA problem approach solution action, because our first webinar, in fact, all of our webinars follow that same type of approach.
See, and that's another example of how it's not just like being in an elevator, but how it really sets the stage for so many other marketing and sales activities. And what you just spoke about there is like, what did you capture? You captured that moment of like, ugh, that the customer is facing. The more you capture that, the better. And I can give you an example if you want of a KPASA pitch. So probably like my favorite one that I've ever worked on is a company called FanFood, also based out of Chicago here. I'm not even going to like give you an upfront about what they are. I'll just say what their KPASA pitch is. So for FanFood, as a diehard sports fan, there's nothing more frustrating than going to your favorite team's game and missing the big play because you were stuck waiting in line for a hot dog and beer. FanFood keeps you in the moment. Get your food and drinks delivered directly to your seat with the FanFood mobile ordering app and never miss a big play again. Download FanFood in the App Store today.
That's awesome.
I didn't have to talk to you about the menu items.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't have to talk to you about how you tap this button and then do this thing to get a delivery person sent to you. Just talk about in the context of the frustration, right? Right? The problem. And what's really cool is Carson, their CEO, when I have observed him deliver this pitch, there have been moments where people will stop him to tell him the game they were at. And at one time I was with him, he was delivering this to a group of people. Someone stopped him mid-sentence to say, that was me, the Odell Beckham catch. I missed the Odell Beckham catch, the best catch in NFL history. I paid like $1,000 for my end zone seat. And I was waiting in line for like an hour because it was like after halftime, I think. And I had to watch the play on the monitor above the concession stand. And like, I was in that end zone where it happened. My seat was in that same end zone, right? That's how you know you've made that emotional connection and you really, you know, targeted, zeroed in on that pain point.
Oh, Raj, I love that. I think that's probably the most important part is again, it kind of goes back to the empathy that I have with your wife, having not seen Hamilton. I get that problem. And I think the key here is to make sure that whoever you're, I think so often a lot of product owners or businesses, they forget the original pain of why they created the business or why they created the product or the solution or the service. And I think the better you are at really connecting with what your customer's pain is and what that problem is, the easier it is to create a K-Pasta type of pitch. So I appreciate that a ton.
This is actually why I think that instead of product marketers, companies should change the title and make them problem marketers. Because if your title was problem marketer, you'd be so much more focused on customer pains and less focused on product features.
No, I totally agree. The whole feature benefits thing really doesn't matter, especially these days. People can figure that out themselves.
Right.
So I'm kind of curious. I know we talked before the beginning here of putting together something for people actually kind of get more detail on this whole K-Pasta pitch. What do you have set up for people to be able to actually find out more about that or find out more about you?
Yeah. So I figure if you're listening to this, there's a decent chance that you're not like furiously taking notes and like doing only this while listening. You're probably working out or you're driving or you're going for a run or something like that. And if there's stuff in this where you were like, I wish I would have written that down. I got your back. So I have a really easy, like one page K-Pasta pitch guide that you can all download. And it walks through the formula. It explains a little bit more and gives you some discussion prompts to figure out your own, as well as some examples. And that is, maybe it's two pages then and not one page, but anyways, and that is a super easy URL. You can just go to startuphypeman.com/clickfunnels, startuphypeman.com/clickfunnels. You can grab a copy of that guide there and, you know, let me know what you think and reach out to me with your questions.
Oh, that's awesome. So again, startup and then Hypeman is H-Y-P-E-M-A-N. So yes. startuphypeman.com/clickfunnels. Raj, thank you so much. Any parting words to our audience?
Go see Hamilton if you haven't seen it yet. It's on Disney Plus now. You can see it for $8. And I think my last thing here would be, we didn't talk about this directly, but we were generally talking about it. Reframe your mindset and really, really think like an entertainer, because the entertainer's sole goal is make an emotional connection with their audience. And if you think like an entertainer, then you will naturally see and speak from your audience's point of view.
And I love that. Raj, thank you so much for your time, bud. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I hope you absolutely loved all the value of that podcast. Speaking of value right now, one of the things we're really trying to do is over-deliver. And the thing we've seen that has probably created the greatest opportunity for us to over-deliver to all of you, and that is our One Funnel Away Challenge. In fact, you can actually see it at clickfunnelsradio.com/OFA. Again, clickfunnelsradio.com/OFA. If you've gone through the One Funnel Away Challenge in the past, this is something totally new. We started the One Funnel Away Challenge back in 2018, and it is now 2.5 years later, we decided to completely redo it. Everything brand new. Simplifying the process, making it just as easy as possible for you to get results quick. Just spend 30 minutes every single day, and what you're gonna get is Russell teaching you exactly what you need to do to get your funnel up and running in the next 30 days. So go to clickfunnelsradio.com/OFA and you can get all the details there. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.